lead us from the unreal to the real. Lead us from darkness unto light. Lead us from death to immortality. Om, peace, peace, peace. We'll chant Om for a minute. Do it at your own pace. There'll be a continuous vibration of Om going on. Good morning and welcome back to the retreat on Upadesha Saram. The Upadesha Saram has a beautiful musical chant to it. So it's good to hear the text. It can be done in around 5 minutes. So those who want to follow, you can follow on your text. I will also do that.
Karturagyaya prapyate phalam karma kim param karma tajjadam kruti mahodalau patana karanam phalam shashvatam gati nirodhakam ishwararpitam nechayakritam chitta shodhakam mukti sadhakam kaya vamana kaya muttamam Pujanam japa chintanam krama jagatishadi yukta sevanam ashtamurti deva pujanam uttamasavad uchamandata chittajam japa jnanam uttamam Ajataraya Srotasasamam Sarala Chintanam Viralata Param Veda Bhavana Soha Mityasau Bhavana Vida Pavanimata Bhava Shunyasat Bhava Sustiti Bhavana Balad Bhakti Ruttama Risthale Mana Swastata Kriya Bhakti Yoga Bodhashya Nishchitam Vayu Rodhana Liyate Mana Jala Pakshivat Rodha Sadhanam Chitta Vayavach Chit Kriya Yuta Shakha Yodhvayi Shakti Moolaka Laya Vinashane Uhaya Rodhane Laya Gatam Punar Bhavati Nomritam Prana Bandhana Lina Manasam Eka Chintana Nasha Mityada Nashta Manaso Krishta Yoga योगिनः कृत्यमस्ति किं स्वस्तिकं यतः वृषभादिकं चित्तमात्मनः चित्त्वदर्शनं तत्त्वदर्शनं मानसं तु किं मार्गणे कृते नैव मानसं मार्गाजवा वृत्तयस्वहं वृत्तिमाश्रिताः वृत्तयो मनो विद्यनं मनः अहमयं कुतो भवति चिन्वत ऐपतत्यहं निजविचारणम् अहमिनाशवाद्यहमहंतया स्फुरतिरस्वयं परमपूर्णस इदमहमृगाभिज्ञमन्वहम् अहमिलीनगे व्यलयसत्यया विग्रहेन्द्रिया प्राणदीपमः नाहमेकस तज्जडं यस सत्त्वभासिका चिक्रमेतरा सत्यया निजे चित्तयायणम् ईश जीवयोर्वेषधीमिला सत्स्वभावतो वस्तु केवलम् वेषमानतः स्वात्मदर्शनम् ईशदर्शनम् स्वात्मरूपतः आत्मसंस्थिति स्वात्मदर्शनम् आत्मनिर्द्वया आत्मनिष्ठता ज्ञानवर्जिता ज्ञानहीन चेत् ज्ञानमस्ति किम् ज्ञातुमन्तरम् किं स्वरूपमेत्यात्मदर्शने अव्यया भवा पूर्णचित्सुखम् बन्धमुक्त्यवीतनुपरं सुखम् विन्दतीह जीवस्तु दैविकः अहमपेतकम् निजविभानकम् महदिदं तपो रमणवाहियम् अहमपेतकम् निजविभानकम् महदिदं तपो रमणवाहियम्
Nice. Simple and sweet. All right. Now, in the 10th verse, Ramana Maharshi had said, Ritstale mana swastata kriya bhakti yoga bodhascha nishchitam. Mana means mind, and Ritstale means simply in the Atman, not in the self. For Ramana Maharshi, Rit, or the Hridaya, is the heart, is the ultimate, is the reality, is our reality. Now, establishment of the mind in the heart, literally what it means. But basically what it means, identity that I am Brahman, to settle down in that. And he says all the paths lead you to that. He uses the terms kriya, implying action, bhakti, implying devotion, yoga, implying meditation, and bodha, implying knowledge. The four yogas will lead you to that. And being established in that, that's the whole purpose. Now he has already talked about karma yoga, he has talked about bhakti yoga. Now he's talking about meditation, raja yoga. And in meditation he has given importance to pranayama, control of the breath. He says by control of the breath, one can attain absolute stillness of mind. How will that help? How will that absolute stillness of mind be of any help? It helps in this way. What obscures our knowledge of ourselves is the incessant activity of the mind. Incessant activity of the mind that obscures our knowledge of ourselves, our own reality. So if you could still the mind in meditation, then the possibility is that we will realize who we are. That's the basic idea behind Patanjali Yoga. Yoga chitta vritti nirodha. Yoga is stilling the vrittis, the modifications of the mind. What will happen then? Tada drashtu swarupi avasthanam. Then the witness consciousness is appreciated in its real nature. Otherwise, what happens? Vritti sarupya mitaratra. As the mind breaks out into waves, you become identified with those waves. So there's a wave of anger. We never say that I am the witness of the wave of anger arising in the lake of my mind. We say, I am mad at you. I am angry. See, anger is a modification of the mind. I is awareness. The two cannot literally be the same thing. And yet we act as if we immediately become identified with it. So if you still the modifications of the mind, still, but modification of the mind sounds very sort of dry and academic. It just means anything and everything we are thinking about. Whatever you're thinking about, thoughts, emotions, perceptions, all of these, memories, all of these are vrittis. Can they be silenced? So, one way is to silence the mind, that is the yogic way. And if you silence the mind, your real nature as unalloyed awareness, not mixed with the modifications of the mind, that becomes clear. So, this is the yogic approach to it. Now, we will enter into the 14th verse. One way these many of these books are divided and classified is up to 15th is yoga, that means meditation. And 16th onwards is jnana. But I'll show you 14th and 15th are sort of transitional between yoga and jnana. How? We will see. Come to verse number 14. I will chant the first time, so from now on we will chant the individual verses and try to understand them. Verse number 14, I'll chant the first one and you chant after me. Prana bandhanat lina manasam.
Prana bandhanat lina manasam.
Eka chintanat nashametyada.
Eka chintanat nashametyada.
So, leena manasam, when the activities of the mind are merged or settled or quietened. How? Prana bandhana, by pranayama, control of the breath. What is the connection? Those things we saw. We are not concerned with the details today. How mind and breath are connected is a very interesting insight. So, using that principle, by controlling the breath, one can control the mind, and by a particular control of the breath, stilling the breath stills the mind. And I'm reminded of sometimes I've seen on this, Discovery Channel, National Geographic. Have you seen a cheetah or a leopard about to pounce or hunt? You know, it's talking. It becomes absolutely still. It'll stop breathing also for a few seconds. The yogi in deep meditation, still the body, no movement. That's more difficult than you might think. To stop fidgeting. Non-fidgety yoga is important for us, especially in this day and age. Especially kids, you see them bouncing all the time. No, stop the fidgeting of the body. Then the fidgeting of the tongue, the continuous talking, stop talking. Then the fidgeting of the mind. So you shut down the senses, not see, not hear, try not to smell, taste, touch. The mind is turned inwards and calmed and settled. And the how to calm and settle, many techniques are there. One is the pranayama. Other techniques are there also there. There is mantra japa, there is the visualization of the deity, and so many things are there. Om chanting is one way. Leena manasam. The mind is absorbed. What is the translation given for leena manasam here? Mind gets absorbed, right? Mind gets absorbed. Intense focus. But what kind of focus is it? It's like the spring on which a weight has been put. So it is pressed down. If you remove the weight, it will bounce back again. Stop practicing the meditation, the pranayama, the japa, it mind will bounce back again. But anyway, at that time it is absorbed. Another thing he says, eka chintanat, another method, nasham etyada. By literally the eka chintana, the word eka chintana term means by contemplation on one, or meditation on one, or focus on one. Now what is that focus on one? He has not explained any further. That leaves it open to interpretation. One, if you are thinking about yoga, meditation, then it is just the way to settle the mind and stop it is going from thoughts of many things to the thought of one thing. See, thoughts will keep on coming, one after another, continuously. Now usually each thought is about a different thing. Thinking about, you're seeing something now, then hearing something, then thinking about something, remembering something, feeling something else, again seeing something. So each flash, each vritti is about a separate thing. This is our normal way of functioning. In focus, any kind of concentration, what is our attempt? Each succeeding vritti should be about the same thing. Suppose I'm studying a book. So vritti, what am I focusing on? Book. Next vritti, book. Next vritti, book, whatever the text is. Focus, 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 continuously there. Meditation is also like that. So this is one meaning of eka chintana. Suppose you're thinking of Om, or you're thinking of Shiva, and nothing else except Shiva. Om Namah Shivaya, I'm visualizing Shiva, or Krishna. So eka chintana. By one thought, many thoughts are quietened. And then next what happens? So this is called Savikalpa Samadhi. Next, what happens? Even that one thought disappears and the mind is absolutely stilled. Chitta vritti nirodha, nirvikalpa samadhi. So that's possible. That's one way. That's one meaning of eka chintana. And by that nirvikalpa samadhi, he says, nasham ityaga. The mind is destroyed. Destruction of the mind. Literally, nasha means destruction. Now, here is the question. What is this concept of destruction of the mind? I will dwell a little bit on this. That's why I stopped at this verse and then we will go on. Manonasha. It's a term which is ancient. It goes back to Yoga Vashishta and you find it extensive use in the text Jivan Mukti Viveka by Vidyaranya Swami about 600-700 years ago. So in classical Advaita, the term Manonasha is actually found. Not so much in Shankara and post-Shankara masters, but more in parallel texts like Yoga Vashishta. But then it comes together in Vidyaranya Swami, in Jivan Mukti Viveka. What does it mean? First of all, it cannot literally mean total destruction of the mind. Neither in Yoga nor in Advaita. Why? First of all, literal destruction of the mind is a very unappealing sound to it. After enlightenment, samadhi, do I become brainless? And like I was quoted Professor Garfield, brainstem Buddha. So do I become brainless, mindless? Brain and mind are not the same thing. Just today at breakfast, somebody was referring to a recent news item, the bet between David Chalmers and Christoph Koch. Christoph Koch is a neuroscientist in the Paul Allen Brain Institute. David Chalmers is a very well-known philosopher of mind. He's probably the leading philosopher of mind in the world today. He is the one who coined the term hard problem of consciousness. Mm-hmm. About 25 years ago, they had a bet. And the bet was, Christoph Koch said, within 25 years, we will find an explanation of consciousness based on the brain. How brain produces consciousness, we will be able to prove it. And David Chalmers says, you will never be able to prove it. 25 years went by. It's only last week or two weeks ago, somebody reminded them that you had a bet 25 years ago, 1998 to 1999. So who has won the bet 25 years later? So the general consensus is that David Chalmers won the bet. There has been no progress at all in trying to find out how brain produces consciousness. So David Chalmers' point is that brain does not produce consciousness. Consciousness cannot be produced by a material entity. So there was a picture of Christoph Koch handing over a crate of champagne or something to David Chalmers that you won the bet. So brain and mind are not the same thing. I think it was a Marxist philosopher, either Marx or Lenin, who criticized subjective idealism of Berkeley by saying it's a brainless philosophy. Mm-hmm. What does subjective idealism say? That everything is in the mind, right? So everything is an appearance in the mind and there's nothing outside the mind. Therefore, the body is also not outside the mind. There's no such thing as a brain also. If you don't experience something, it doesn't exist. So you're not experiencing your own brain, it doesn't exist, so you're brainless. It's a very a crude way of putting a subjective idealism. Anyway, so brain and... Now, it cannot be destruction of the mind. Another reason is that after enlightenment, we see the people we consider to be enlightened, whether it's Ramana Maharshi or Vivekananda or others, enlightened people, they are clearly walking and talking and recognizing us, displaying all signs of mental activity. The mind exists. So that seems to be proof. As they were earlier before the enlightenment, so they are walking around, talking, recognizing, eating. They understand what you say to them. They reply coherently to you. So clearly some mind is functioning. Another reason would be that it's logical to say that after enlightenment, the mind is gone. Body is clearly not gone after enlightenment. Body is there. And clearly, if you investigate, every organ in the body is there. Body is there and functioning. Your liver is functioning, lungs are functioning, heart is functioning. Why should suddenly the mind stop? So for all of these reasons, destruction of mind literally does not mean destruction of mind. That mind is gone after enlightenment. No. What does it mean? Three possible meanings are there. One is the yogic meaning, one is the Advaitic meaning, and third I'll give another meaning from the Gita. The yogic meaning is destruction of mind is the mind absorbed in samadhi, when it is not functioning at all. So the mind completely stilled in samadhi, chitta vritti nirodha, that is called destruction of the mind. That is one meaning. Where do you find this meaning? You find this meaning, for example, in Jivan Mukti Viveka. So the mind, the ability to become absorbed into your real nature is the Atman and still the mind there, no activity of the mind. That is called Manonasha, one meaning. Second meaning is the Advaitic meaning, which Ramana Maharshi will take henceforth. That Advaitic meaning is the falsification of the mind, Mithyatva Nishchayaha. Another term is Badha. What do you mean by badha or mithyatva nishchaya? The difference is this. Suppose you are watching a movie on a screen. Now, if you want, so something terrible is happening in the movie. If you want to freedom from that something terrible happening in the movie, one option you have is switching off the movie. Another option is you recognize that it's a movie. Whether a big fire is burning, there's smoke, big fire is burning, screen is not affected by the fire. Great flood is there, screen is not made wet or soggy by that flood. Because whatever is happening in the movie, the persons, events, objects in the movie, they are all appearances. They are not the same level of reality as the screen. A real fire would burn the screen, right? But it's an appearance. Therefore, terrible things can happen in the movie and you can only get aesthetic enjoyment out of it. If that even a fraction of that suffering happened in front of you, you would suffer. You would feel sad if somebody is suffering, somebody is dying, somebody is crying, the war is taking place in front of you. We would all suffer immediately. I joke sometimes that you can see King Kong on the screen and you can enjoy huge monkey or ape jumping on New York and destroying things. It's a nice science fiction movie. If a small, actual, real monkey entered the movie theater, people would scream and run away. Even a little monkey, people would scream and run away, let alone King Kong. Why? Why you are afraid of the little monkey in front of you? It may bite me or something, but you are not at all afraid of the giant King Kong in the movie? Because it's a movie. You will say, there's no problem, Swami, enjoy it. It cannot do anything to you. It can damage the fictional New York, the movie New York.
But it cannot damage, and even in Hindi they say, ek baal bhi baka nahi kar paaye. It can't hurt one hair of your head. I don't have too much. So, because it's a movie, now the same thing can be said about the mind. Either you recognize that the mind is an appearance, like a movie. In that case, there is no particular need to shut it down. You can let it play on. That is one destruction of the mind. Mano nasha, one meaning of destruction of mind is that. The falsification of the mind, the movification, that it's an appearance. Really, I am limitless consciousness. I am not that mind subject to daily ups and downs. One sadhu put it nicely. Notice the mind. Ek hi din mein, I'll tell you in Hindi and translate. Ek hi din mein, kitne baar sukhi hue, kitne baar dukhi hue, kitne baar uttejit hue, kitne baar man kharab hua. So in the same in course of one day, how many times excited, how many times bored, how many times alert, how many times sleepy, how many times angry, how many times peaceful, in the course of one day. Continuous ups and downs of the mind, and it takes us for a ride. It pulls us along in its wild journey and makes us suffer. How do you save yourself from that suffering? Mano nasha, by the destruction of the mind. What is the destruction of the mind? The falsification, movification of the mind. That you are that unchanged consciousness, unchanged awareness on which the mind is playing its mad movie. Then you are free of the mind. Just as you are free of the terrible events happening in the movie on the screen, you are free of it. You are watching it and yet free of it. Similarly, mind is active. It's doing its thing. Thoughts are coming, memories are coming, perceptions are coming, emotions are coming, even emotions are coming. But you are not affected by it. Just like the vast blue sky is smoke now. Then it clouds now. And then there is nothing, empty sky. But the sky is unaffected. So no, Swami, it is polluted, affected. Space is not polluted. We will be affected. Our lungs will be affected. Houses, trees, all of these will be affected. Other material entities will be affected. But interestingly, space itself is not affected. When the smoke goes away, space is still the same. So, you are not affected by it, by falsification of the mind. Mano nasha, one meaning is mithyatva nishchaya. Another meaning is samadhi. Let me introduce two terms which are very useful in Advaita Vedanta, in understanding Vedanta. The distinction between yoga and Vedanta, these two terms. Yoga is nirodha. Vedanta is badha. Nirodha and badha. Nirodha means stopping, ceasing, stilling the mind. Stop. So that is Nirodha. Don't see, hear, smell, taste, touch. Don't move. Don't think. Don't remember. Don't feel. Stop the mind. That is Nirodha. Badha is the falsification. So for example, you see somebody saw water in the desert, in the oasis. And then realize it's a mirage. When you realize it's a mirage, it still looks like water, but you know it's not water. That's called badha. There's an English word that doesn't make anything clearer. Sublation. Sublation. Sublation basically is you're experiencing it, but you know it's fiction. Like a movie. Like a dream. Like a mirage. Or you see the snake in the rope, and then you realize later there is no snake there. So that is badha. Do you see the difference between Nirodha and Badha? I'll give you another example. Lies and silence. So one thing is telling the truth. That's one thing. Another thing is keeping quiet, not telling anything. Third thing is telling a lie. Okay. Now, look at the difference between silence and telling a lie. If you know a lie is a lie, that is Badha. You know it's not true. You heard something, but it's not true. And silence is different. Nothing has been said at all. So the yogic method is the silence method. And the Advaitic method is to recognize that it's an appearance, a lie. That is Bhag. So these are two meanings of Manonasha, destruction of the mind. Third meaning, Manonasha, destruction of the mind. What does it mean? Mind is not really a problem. It is the problematic mind which is a problem. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. Atmaiva atmano vandhu, atmaiva ripuratmanaha. The mind is its own best friend. Literally it means the self is your own best friend, the self is your worst enemy. What does that mean? If you look at the commentaries, the self means here the mind. The mind is your best friend, the mind is your worst enemy. And then he goes on to explain, which mind is your best friend? Which mind is your worst enemy? The trained mind is your controlled and trained mind. Purified and controlled mind is your best friend. The unpurified and uncontrolled mind is your worst enemy. That is the third meaning of Manonasha, destruction of the mind. What does it mean? Trained mind. Destruction of the mind means destruction of the untrained mind. The development of the trained mind. What is a trained mind? Trained mind is a purified and controlled mind. Both. A purified mind, and then it's under your charge. So your charge means whose charge? The higher mind, which has decided, now I shall meditate on my deity, on God. Now I shall do kirtan or bhajan. Now I shall engage in work. And the mind will do it without resistance. In our case, mostly what happens is the mind throws up a lot of resistance. Either the mind wins or we win, it's a tug of war. Whether it's meditation or study or work, everywhere, the mind is not 100% behind your projects. It has its own, mind is a mind of its own. That mind of its own must be destroyed. That is called Manonasha. So third meaning of Manonasha in the Gita sense, trained mind. Trained, that is controlled and purified mind. I remember I was in Gangotri, I heard this from a monk there. Vishayi man, yogi ka man. A mind engrossed in worldliness and a yogic mind. The difference between that. So a monk told me, I was sitting near the river, the Ganga there. It's narrow and flowing fast. And that sadhu was sitting next to me and he said, look, in Hindi he told me, Mahatma ji dekhi, Ganga ji ko dekhi, look at the Ganga, oh monk. At that time it was the rainy season, July, August. So there's a lot of water there. You see, there's a lot of water, it is flowing fast. And you cannot cross it, it will sweep you away, it's dangerous. Actually somebody had been swept away the day before, unwary pilgrim had been swept away the day before. It will sweep you away, it's dangerous. And second, this water you cannot drink. The water was, in the rainy season there are landslides and everything, so water is muddy. A lot of soil is swept away. So it is, you could nahi pee sakte, dusro ko bhi nahi pila sakte. You can't drink it yourself, you can't offer it to anybody else. Third, he said that it is, there is a lot of water and it is flowing fast. And then he said that vishayika man, that the mind of the worldly mind is like this. It is dangerous. You don't know where it will sweep you away. Second, just like this water, you cannot drink it and you cannot offer it to others. Similarly, the worldly mind, it gives you no peace and it does not give any peace to people around you. So I have no peace and I am also a source of trouble for people around me. The third one is that it is full of lot of thoughts and various kinds of thoughts. Just like this is full of lot of water flowing fast. Then he said, the monk said to me, you come in winter, Jare mein aaye Swamiji, you come in winter. And then you will see, the water is so calm and steady, you can easily cross across. You can go across, you can walk across from this shore to the other shore. It's not very far, it's very narrow. It is not dangerous. And then he said, the water is so clear. He put it in his rural Hindi, he said, आप चवन्नी फेंक दोगे तो सेतु से दिखेगी. देयर इज अ वुडन ब्रिज देयर. ऑन टॉप ऑफ द ब्रिज इफ यू लुक एंड यू थ्रो डाउन अ कॉइन यू कैन रीड अप द डिनोमिनेशन ऑफ द कॉइन. सो द वाटर इज सो ग्लासी एंड प्योर. थर्ड थिंग ही सेड इज दैट that there is very little water and stops sometimes. Sometimes there is ice build up and it stops. Then he said, this is like a yogi's mind. It is not dangerous. It will not harm you or anybody else. Second, you can drink it. It's very pure. And you can offer it to others for drinking. So similarly, yogi's mind is peaceful. It gives you a lot of peace and joy. And you will be the source of peace. You'll radiate it around you to others. And third one, he said, is that thoughts are few, exactly what you want those thoughts to be, those thoughts are there. And if you don't want any thoughts, those thoughts stop. In Ramana Maharshi, there's one story about he's sitting quietly as usual in the cave and in stillness and silence. And one visitor who sat there for some time looked at him and said, what is the Maharshi thinking? Ramana Maharshi did not answer. Somebody sitting next to him said, Maharshi is not thinking of anything. And then Ramana Maharshi nodded and smiled. Why should you think all the time? And when you think, you should think exactly what you want to think. So that is the sign of a trained mind. That's also Manonasha. Manonasha in that sense. So these are the three meanings of Manonasha I wanted to share with you. Eka Chintanar. By one thought, the mind is destroyed. By one thought means, in the yogic sense, one thought means you think of Om or your chosen deity, Krishna or Shiva, or just follow the breath, one thing only. And then from one thing to nothing, the mind will become still. That is the yogic way. But Eka Chintanath has another meaning, the Advaitic meaning. Here, Eka means Atman, the one. And chintana here means shravana manana nididhyasana. So by continuous hearing, reflection and meditation on the one, destruction of the mind is attained. Manonasha is attained. I'll keep using the term manonasha. But remember, manonasha does not mean literal destruction of the mind. In all the three meanings, yogic meaning, even yogic meaning, it does not mean literal destruction of the mind. Because after you come out of nirvikalpa samadhi, mind will work again. Work better. So that is it. Now we go on to the 15th verse. So what happens by this manonasha? What will you get?
Nashta manasot krishta yogina. Nashta manasot krishta yogina. Krityam astikim swastitim yata. Krityam astikim swastitim yata.
What duty is there for that highest of yogis whose mind has been annihilated? So when you hear these terms, mind annihilated, man destroyed. So it manonasha, what it means is manonasha. So what remains to be done? Nothing. Because he has gained abidance in the self, capital S self. This nashta manasa, manonasha, leads to the state of utkrishta yogi. Utkrishta yogi is the highest yogi or the final state of the yogi. What this utkrishta yogi is, two references. One from the Bhagavad Gita and one from Jivan Mukti Viveka. In the Bhagavad Gita, at the end of the second chapter, Arjuna asks this question. So suppose I become enlightened, then what will it be like? And he asks some detailed questions. How does this enlightened person walk, talk, sit? How does this person absorb in samadhi? How does this person engage with the world? How does this person react to the world? Literally not walk, talk. So walking means engaging with things in the world. Talking means how does he react to the happenings in life. And sitting means how does this person withdraw from the world. And this yogi, how is this yogi in samadhi and out of samadhi? There are two terms, samadhista and yutthana. Yutthana means arising from samadhi. And again the world appears, body appears, mind starts working. So in these two states, And the word used here by Ramana Maharshi is Utkrishta Yogi, the supreme yogi, the highest yogi, the fully accomplished yogi. The word used by Arjuna in the Gita is Sthita Pragya, the one of established or stabilized wisdom. Notice, often in the path of Jnana, we have this comment that I understood it, I got it also, but it slipped away. Or it's clear to me in the class once in a while, but afterwards it's gone again. Especially when I go back into life and engage with life, then it goes away. Especially troublesome neighbor or something like a boss in the job, then it's gone again. So what we want is not only wisdom, the realization, aham, brahmasmi, but also stabilized wisdom. We want it to stay and stay effortlessly. It should be available to me all the time effortlessly. So when that happens, that is called Sthita Pragya. And then what Krishna says, I will not go into it, but just a reference for you. Who is this Utkrishta Yogi? Sthita Pragya as described by Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna describes how is the samadhi of such a yogi, actual yogic samadhi, being absorbed. And then coming back into this world of action, still nashta manasam, the mind is destroyed in the sense, the world will appear, mind, body, world, all will appear like a movie. Then how does this person walk, talk, engage with the world and all that? So that is one reference. The second, more analytic reference is given in Jivan Mukti Viveka. Who is this perfected one? What we are looking for ultimately? What is our goal in Vedanta? So there, the word used is Jivan Mukta. That's the common goal which we all have. We want Jivan while this body is living. Mukta, liberated from samsara. So you are liberated from samsara and yet here, the body is still existing. Vidyaranya Swami, he says, Jivan Mukti has three components. This is very interesting. This is where the term Manonasha will again come. Jivan Mukti, free while living, the full final accomplishment, has three components. Three components are Tattva Bodha, Manonasha, Vasanakshaya. Three components. Tattva Bodha, Manonasha, Vasanakshaya. Tattva Bodha is realization of the reality. Tattva, reality. Who am I? I am Brahman, realized. That is called Tattva Bodha. Isn't it enough? Here's the interesting thing. Vidyaranya Swami says, no, that's not enough. Not enough for what? Not enough for Jivan Mukti. One more thing is necessary. The mind must be trained in such a way that it can become absorbed in that reality at your wish. Isn't it natural? No, not natural. Unless you have trained it, it will not happen. And then third one is, the mind must be purified. So all the vasanas, the desires which pull us out towards this world, worldly desire and otherworldly desire, those must be completely pure. We must see that I want none of it. They are all appearances, they are like a movie, no matter how attractive they are. I am not tempted by anything that this world or the other world might present. And temptation and terror, I am not terrified by anything in this world or the other world can present. So that is Vasanakshaya, complete purification of the mind. And Manonasha, the ability to become absorbed in Brahman, in Atman, my real nature. And the third component is Tattva Bodha, the realization, the clear knowledge, I am Brahman or I am Atman. Now, according to the traditional approach, all three should happen. They should more or less mature at the same time. And one can become a Jivan Mukta. This is what he calls Utkrishta Yogi. When will they mature at the same time? If you have done your homework, if the previous sadhana has been done, have you been a devout person, a moral person, and a meditative person? If you have excelled in Karma Yoga, you get A or A plus, Karma Yoga, you've excelled in Bhakti Yoga, and you excelled in Raja Yoga, all three if you have accomplished, then when enlightenment comes, Aham Brahmasmi, when you realize, you will become a Jivan Mukta, no further effort is required. There's a term for this which Vidyaranya Swami uses, Krito Upasti. Kritopasti. Kritopasti means one who has completed the course of sadhana. One who has completed the course of sadhana. But there can be, he says, that there can be a kritopasti, person who has not completed the course of sadhana and yet attained enlightenment. He says, by the grace of the Guru or by your own effort, by your own inquiry, by something, or by past lives, punya, merits, of whatever reason, you can suddenly, you know, stumble upon it or have a breakthrough. Then what happens? Then he says that you have not completed the course of sadhana and its effect will be, you will know the truth. Not that it is useless. It is most valuable. Once you make the breakthrough, the difference will be, earlier you were a seeker. Now you are not a seeker. You have found it already. What you are looking for, you have found it. And the only problem will be, the mind still is not fully pacified. Manonasha has not happened. Purification of the mind has not happened. Then what will happen is, this person, they say in Uttarakhand, it's well known among the sadhus, Jivan Mukti ka vilakshan sukh nahi milega usko. The unique joy, the extraordinary bliss and happiness of a Jivan Mukta, this person will not get. Once in a while will be shaken by the sorrows of this world. Once in a mind, the mind will be shaken, will be upset, and he can recover very fast. He's not an ordinary person because some sadhana this person has already done. Some purification is clearly there. Some concentration and focus is clearly there. And enlightenment is there. You have seen the truth. That you cannot, it's such a powerful thing. Then what has to be done? Why should any more sadhana be done? The reason is that what was our goal ultimately? Dukkha nivritti ananda prapti. Overcoming suffering and attainment of bliss. If that has not yet been fully attained, and I must honestly say that, yes, I have not fully attained it, then you have some more work to be done. Some work to be done. That work is sadhana. What sadhana? The same sadhana the person was doing earlier. The same japa, dhyana, seva, whatever he was doing. That sadhana more intensified, intensively. However, qualitatively it will be very different. Same way this person is sitting, same puja this person may be doing, chanting this person may be doing, but qualitatively very different. Earlier you were seeking in meditation. Now you have found. There is no doubt in your mind anymore. You know what it is. So everything will be superlatively better. Your bhakti, for example, earlier your bhakti, your devotion was in a god you believed that it existed, that such a god exists. Now you know. I saw an interview, an actual recorded interview with Carl Jung. It's there in the rare archival footage on YouTube. Carl Jung, in later years, he's asked, so, Professor Jung, do you believe in God? It's an old black and white footage. And he says, that's a difficult question because I can't say that I believe in God. I know that God exists. He said, earlier I would have said, I believe in God. Now I can't say that, because now I have to say, I know. So you know, your bhakti is that much stronger, because you know that it exists, the reality. And your knowledge is absolutely blazing clear, effortlessly, all the time it is available to you that you are limitless consciousness. But still that mind, purification of the mind is done, and meditation, japa and all of that will intensify and help you. Let me leave it there. So these are the two meanings. One from Bhagavad Gita, Sthita Pragya, and one from Jivan Mukti Viveka, where the classical term of Jivan Mukta is applied. This is the meaning of Utkrishta Yogi. What happens when you are Utkrishta Yogi? He says, Krityamasti King. What remains to be done after you become a Jivan Mukta, Sthita Pragya, Utkrishta Yogi, whatever term you use? Nothing remains to be done. So in Panchadashi, Vidyaranya Swami mentions, he says, what accounts for the great joy of an enlightened person? One common thing you will find, people who are spiritually advanced and enlightened, they are very joyful. Somebody said, if you are enlightened, you lose the right to grumble. You lose the right to complain. You can't complain. You can't say at the same time I'm enlightened and you can then have so many complaints about everything. No, you can't. So what accounts for the joy? Praptavya praptataya, gyantavya gyantataya, kartavya kritataya. He says, kritakritya. you have the clear sense you have done what has to be done in human life. It's done. What has to be attained, got in human life, you've got it. Praptavya. There is nothing higher. And what has to be known in human life? What has to be known in human life? That you have known. Jnatavya. So having known what has to be known in human life, having attained what has to be attained in human life, having done what has to be done in human life, you are full of bliss, full of happiness. Somebody asked, won't you be bored? No, an enlightened person is never bored. You look at the lives of any highly, let alone enlightened, Jivan Mukta, any highly spiritual person, they are not bored. That's one thing that they are not. They are full of life and happiness. So, yes. Krityam asti kim. What is remaining to be done? Nothing is remaining to be done. However, keep in mind here, this person does not sit like a stone wall or a heap of bricks. Nothing. What happened? Enlightened. Nothing to do. No. Often these persons are more active than the rest of us. And they achieve much, much more than most other people. So at the level of the body, mind, lot of activity may go on. These persons may found organizations and, you know, generate religious, spiritual movements. They may write and they may teach. Or they may serve, or they may spend time absorbed in meditation. That itself will be a blessing to humanity. So, full of activity, and yet from their own perspective, nothing. They're not doing anything. Then number 16. From 16 onwards, it's called Jnana Yoga. And most of the, all the books, in fact, they will say the path of knowledge starts here. Now, how shall I use this path of knowledge to realize I am Brahman? Bhakti we understand. Karma we understand. Meditation also we understand. But often people don't understand what is this exactly path of knowledge. So, we will see here.
Drishyavaritam chittam atmana. Drishyavaritam chittam atmana. Chitva darshanam tatva darshanam. Chitva darshanam tatva darshanam.
The mind withdrawn from the objects, it sees itself as consciousness, and that is the vision of reality. Drishyavaritam. Varitam, negated, turned away from. Drishya, object of experience. Whatever is seen, heard, smelled, tasted, touched, and then thought about, remembered. So objects are either experienced through the senses, or the mind thinks about it, remembers it, desires it, hates it, contemplates it, understands it, remembers it, forgets it. All of that is drishya, the object of our experience. Whatever is the object of our experience is not I. Why? Because the subject and the object must be different. You are that which experiences. So anything that you experience is a drishya for you, is an object for you. Then why must we turn away from it? Why must it be negated? Why must we turn away? Because if it's not I, we are continuously involved in the drishya. If you turn away from it, then only the focus will be on the I. On the focus on myself, on the subject. The reason, the main reason why we are not enlightened, the main reason why we do not see ourselves as the Atman, is our continuous engagement with the world outside. Upanishad says, Param chikhani vyatrinat swayambhu, tasmat param pasyatinantar atman. It says, the senses are designed in such a way. In fact, the actual language is, they have a defect. Design defect. What is a design defect? They're continuously flowing outwards. It's not a defect. That's how they're designed to be. They are supposed to put you in touch with the world. The senses are continuously flowing outwards. And they have distracted us from the inner reality. That's why people are continuously aware of the external world. Nantaratman. the inner self, your real nature. See, I am Brahman, but why is it that I am not aware? You can give me any theory of Atma, Ajnana, Maya, whatever it is. Still, it's a mystery. I know so many things, but I don't know myself. Why? So it says, because our attention is continuously engaged in the external world. Then what do you do? Kaschi dhira, what is avritta chakshur, amritattva michchan. So, some great spiritual hero, some spiritual seeker, covering the eyes means turning away from the external world. Pratyagatmana vaikshat, realize the inner self. That is, realize that I am Brahman. How? Avritta chakshu, by cutting off contact with the external world, turning the attention inwards. Why would you do that? External world is very interesting. Why would you turn inwards into what? Some seems vague. Amritattva michchan, desiring immortality, desiring to go beyond human limitations. So, Upanishad says that. This is what Ramana Maharshi is saying, drishya varitam. You will realize that I am Brahman, I am pure consciousness. So in that case, what is the point of it? Chitva darshanam, tattva darshanam. When you realize I am awareness, I am not the body, not the mind, I am awareness. That is tattva darshanam. That is the realization, that is enlightenment, is realization of reality. Earlier we saw jivan mukti has three components. Tattva bodha, then manonasha vasanakshas. The tattva bodha is this one, realization of I am awareness. So let's do a little exercise in drishya varitam. How do you turn away from drishya? The one method is drig drishya viveka. Multiple methods are there. All of the Advaitic methodology is basically this, drishya varitam. Turn inwards into your own nature, turning away from the external world. Chittam atmanaha. Atmanaha chitva darshanam. When the mind, the attention of the mind is turned away from drishya, the objects of the senses or objects of the mind, towards itself and realizes atmanaha chitva darshanam. When you realize yourself as consciousness, that is realization of reality, that is enlightenment. Somebody said, I wish, and Swami, you are saying that your people are always engaged looking at the world outside. I wish people would look at the world, not even looking at the world outside, all looking at the screen. Everywhere you see, people are gathered, two people are having dinner, you can see looking at the screen. And if for some time at all people give attention to each other, then as if they are exhausted, after some time, enough, I'll take out the phone. I walk in Central Park, I often see, there are people who are visiting, tourists, engaged in, look a little bit at this, take up, they're also phone in one picture. Anything good, I see or not see, a phone must see. You see, phone take up. Then after every 5-10 minutes, if together, maybe husband, wife, the partners, brothers, sisters, children, all after 5 or 10 minutes, as if they're tired of each other, tired of Central Park, they all take out their phone. Little relaxation. So, he said that if the people were engaged in seeing the world outside, that also would be good. That also is gone today. Only on one level of Maya over another level of Maya. The basic methodology of Drig Drishya Viveka, we'll see. Rupam Drishyam Lochanam Drik Tad Drishyam Drik Tu Manasam Drishya Dhivrittaya Sakshi Drigeva Natu Drishyate. This is the first verse of the little text called Drig Drishya Viveka. Forms are seen, form or color is seen, eyes are the seer. Eyes are seen, mind is the seer. Mind is seen, the Sakshi is the seer. The Sakshi is never seen. That's all it means. So, this is a procedure for taking us to realizing I am pure consciousness. Right now, right here, it will point us toward a real nature. No harm in trying it out. So the principle is this. Whatever you see, the seen object is different from the seer. There must be two different entities. When I see something, that object which I am seeing is clearly different from the eyes. If something is not different from the eyes cannot see it. In fact, the only thing that the eyes cannot see are the eyes themselves. Yeah. The eyes cannot see themselves. You might say that you can see in a selfie, in a mirror. But that's a picture of the eyes. That's a reflection of the eyes. The eyes do not see themselves directly the way they are seeing everything else. Right. So the seer and the seen are different. Let's start there. Here are beautiful flowers. Now look at these flowers. These flowers are drishya, seen. Eyes are the seer, in a very naive way. Eyes are the seer, flower is the seen. Notice, this will work only when you notice it, not theoretically only. I learned some verses, I learned the meaning and some nice discussion and information. No, actually notice it in experience. Vedanta proceeds with these three, hearing, reflecting, and meditating. But let me give you the simplest interpretation of that. Hearing means, what did he say? Or what did the book say? That's hearing. Question number one. Number two, reflecting. What does it mean? Do I understand it? Do I get it? Third, meditation means to make it assimilate it, make it a living reality. Yeah. Is it a living reality now? Is it a fact? So I will ask you this. Eyes are the seer, the flowers are seen, form is seen. This is the first thing. Now, have I heard this? Yes, Swami, go on. Have I understood this? Yes, very simple. Is it a fact?
Yes.
I am seen? Yes, it's a fact. It's a fact. Not theory, not philosophy. When will I realize this? Eyes are seeing the flower. You are seeing it right now. So eyes are seeing the flower. Now notice. Notice this. Eyes are different from the flower. I mean by that something very simple, very literal. That these are physically they're different entities. And the same eyes might see many things. They're seeing the flower now. Then they're seeing the hand now. Then they are seeing around the room now. Many, many different drishya. Same eyes, same drashta. Second point. Drishya are many. Drashta is one. One means not that we are one eye, but the same organ of vision is seeing many drishya. Third, the drishya are continuously changing. You saw nice, delicious bagels. Now you're looking at a flower now. And what God knows what you will see next. So the drishya is continuously changing. The drashta, the seer, is the same. So 3 points I pointed out. Drashta and drishya, seer and seen, are different. They're separate. They're not the same thing. Second, that the drashta, the seer is one, the seen are many. Third, the seer is unchanging relatively. It will change, but still, relatively unchanging. But the seen are continuously changing. All of this is simple, straightforward. Now let's move on. Next. Tadrishyam driktu manasam. The seer, the eyes, blink them, close the eyes, open the eyes. Did you notice the eyes were closed? Yes. Do you notice that the eyes are open? Yes. What is noticing the eyes? The mind. Mind is the seer within quote unquote. Mind is not literally seeing the eyes, knowing. So mind is the seer, the eyes are the seen. And the different states of the eyes are experienced by the mind. At one time I had 20/20 vision. Now I need glasses. The doctor told me I was not seeing well. So I went to the doctor and asked what's wrong. He said something very serious. What? You are over 40. This is one of the most common indicators of aging is that you will need glasses when you go over 40. So the same eyes. The mind sees that the eyes which were sharp and clear are now changing to become, you require glasses and so on. So, and not only that, not only changing, a variety. The same mind sees the different conditions of the eyes, of the skin, of the ears, all the bodily organs, there are variety, but the same mind sees that. The mind is different from the eyes, not only from the eyes, from the ears, nose and all that, from the physical body. The mind is one, the senses are many. The mind is unchanging, the senses are continuously changing. You will say, just a minute, mind is not unchanging. True, but mind changes into more mind. Thoughts into thoughts into thought. Senses change in various ways depending on what they are. So this is the second stage. Who is the seer?
Mind.
What is the seen? Eyes are the seen. And what about the flowers? Have you forgotten the flowers? No, the flowers are always the seen. Eyes, which were earlier the seer, have now become the seen. Seen means known. And the mind is the knower. So far, heard what he said, Shravana? Yes. Got it? Have you understood, Manana?
Yes.
And Nididhyasana, is it a fact? Have you assimilated it? Is it? You say, it's obvious, Swami, move on.
Then the third part.
Drishyadhivrittaya Sakshi. Now close your eyes and notice the mind has so many thoughts. Somebody said 16,000 thoughts in a day. So variety, what? No matter how many, variety of thoughts, emotions, feelings, emotional states, perceptions. Perceptions all really come to the mind actually. Then memories. And always the sense of ego, I, all of these are there continuously in the mind. And we are aware of them, very interesting. I am aware of the contents of my mind. If that sounds philosophical, theoretical, something practical, take a look. I just think 2 plus 2 is 4. 2 plus 2, 4, just think it in your mind. Were you aware of the 2 plus 2, 4? Yes. What was the 2 plus 2, 4? A thought. So you are aware of it. That you who is aware of the 2 plus 2, 4 is the seer. And the 2 plus 2, 4 which is mind, which is a thought, is the seen. Seer and seen are different. Drashta and Rishi are different. You are different from the mind. You are not literally the mind. The mind is continuously changing. You are unchanging. When the mind was happy, you were there. And you saw and you experienced the happy mind, you felt, I am happy. When the mind became unhappy, and there was unhappiness in the mind, you were there. And you experienced the unhappiness in the mind. You even said, I am unhappy. But you are the same one. It's the mind which changed from happiness to unhappiness. The mind changes continuously. You are not changing. The mind has a variety of thoughts. You are the same. Whatever kind of thought comes in the mind, you are the same. Many drishya, drashta is one. Changing drishya, drashta unchanging. And drashta and drishya are separate. This you, this I, which is not the mind, is the experiencer of the mind, the witness of the mind, is given a name. Sakshi. Drishyadhivrittaya Sakshi. Sakshi means witness. This witness is not an activity. It's more like the light which illumines. It just shines and the mind is illumined. Mind becomes the seen. I am the seer. I, the witness, am the seer. Mind becomes the seen. What about the eyes? The eyes are all also the seen. And through the eyes, the world which I see, the flowers, they are also the seen. The world is the seen, drishya. The body is the seen, drishya. Eyes and all the senses. The mind is the seen, drishya. But there is only one seer. I, the Sakshi. Good. Very nice. Then, can I see this Sakshi? Drigevanatu drishyate. The Sakshi, the witness consciousness, is not seen. It does not become an object of knowledge. Now, try it for experientially. Right now. Try it once. What is the goal? He says, Atmana chittam chitva darshanam. That means to see yourself as consciousness. Start here. Open the eyes. Look at the flower. Just literally look at it here. Very nice, pretty flowers. These flowers are the seen. Now, draw your attention from the flowers to the eyes. Attention. Eyes. Eyes are the seer. Flower is the seen. Eyes are different from the flower. Then next, I blink the eyes. I am aware of the eyes. Close the eyes. Mind is the seer. Eyes are the seen. Mind is different from the eyes. Now notice the mind. Think 2 plus 2, 4. 2 plus 2, 4. I am aware of the 2 plus 2, 4. Therefore mind is the seen. I am the seer.
And I am never seen, I am never an object, I am never a drishya, I am always the drashta. I am separate from the mind, from the body and from the external world. They are many, I am one. They are continuously changing, I am unchanging. This consciousness I am. Change belongs to the world outside, to the body and the mind, not to me. I am the witness of change. Birth and aging and disease and old age and death belong to the body. There are changes in the body. I am the witness. I, the Sakshi, I am not born. I do not age. I do not fall sick. I do not die. But I am the witness of the birth, old age, sickness and death of the body. I am the witness of the mind. The ups and downs of the mind. The sorrow, the unhappiness, the desires, the anger, the resentment, the joys, all these bubbles in the mind, they arise and disappear. I am the witness. They are not mine. Those modifications belong to the mind. I am the unchanging awareness to which all of these appear. In which all of these appear. Alright, gently open the eyes. This is Chitva Darshanam. If you realize this, Tattva Darshanam, you have realized the reality. I am that consciousness. Now, we will go ahead in the next. Next one is from 11 to 12:30. Yeah. So let's have 15 minutes of Q&A. We'll stop here. Details of the inquiry will start next. Any questions so far? Yes. You can just ask the question. Okay. I'll repeat it.
Okay, that's fine.
So we learned in Vedanta that mana is consisting of four parts: the mana, buddhi, chitta, ahankara.
Yeah.
And ahankara is the eye sense as well as the ability to appropriate things to the I sense, that this is mine, the body is mine, this action is I'm doing it, I, me and mine. So does manonasha mean the destruction of the ahamkar ability to appropriate things to itself, whereas the all other things are functioning fine?
No. The ability to appropriate things to itself is the very function of the ahamkara. If you see in Vedanta Sara, definition of ahankara, the ego sense. Right now we all have this ego sense. I. What does it do? What's the function? We know the function of memory. It brings back past impressions. We know the function of intelligence. It helps us to comprehend and understand. So all of these functions of the mind are understood. What is the function of the ego? Why is it there? What does it do?
Ownership.
In Vedanta Sara, clearly definition is given. Abhimanatmika antakkarana vritti ahankara. Ahankara, ego, is the appropriating function of the mind. Antakkarana vritti, which integrates everything into one personality. See, otherwise it will be just an unconnected stream of desires, thoughts, memories, perceptions, likes, dislikes, floating around. But it is all mine. I am this person. I have these problems and prospects. I have these goals, these successes and failures. This function is done by the mind, by the ego. Some past memory comes. We don't say a memory has arisen. You say, I remember. Mm-hmm. There is sensation, a peculiar sensation in the stomach. You don't say a sensation is there in the stomach. You say, I am hungry. I'm not, but I'm the same. So, appropriating function. This appropriating function, will it stop after becoming enlightened? No, it will go on. But then what will happen? Something will happen there. That's what Ramana Maharshi will explain in detail. That's the whole, in fact, the answer, rest of it is answer to your question. Next class. Yes.
So, somewhere a related question. When you mentioned the can one attain that until the ahankara becomes free of kartrutva and bhoktrutva?
No, when one attains that, ahankara becomes free of kartrutva and bhoktrutva. One asks, he was asking,
the krita kritya, the feeling that I have done what has to be done in life, what has to be achieved in life has been achieved. So that is, so whose phone is that? So you have to silence the phone, yeah. When you are here. So when krita kritya, that level, that state is attained, does the sense of agency, doesn't it have to go away before you attain that? No, after you attain that, it goes away, or simultaneously with that. You see, as long as we feel there's something to be attained, that agency is there, I must attain these things. When you feel that everything has been attained, when you see that I am the limitless existence consciousness, please, what is there to be attained by me? What is there to be changed by me? I am like the vast sky which includes everything in this universe. Everything appears in me, plays around in me, and disappears back into me. I realize that. And I'm not this little person anymore. So then the kartritva bhoktritva is gone. And you see, it's not possible. It is the sense of agency and the sense of enjoyer or suffering. That is not possible for pure consciousness, this sakshi bodha. You notice, right now itself you can answer the question. I will do something. I am experiencing pleasure or pain. When does this sakshi, when will it have it? Only when it's connected to mind and senses. This sakshi, with an imposition of the mind and senses, will say, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, I am the sufferer. Without the world, senses and mind, the awareness in itself is not a doer or enjoyer or sufferer. With the world and mind and senses, even then it's also not an enjoyer or sufferer. It is by itself perfectly all right. Only when it takes it to be real and connects to it, appropriates it, then only it is enjoyer or sufferer. That's what Ramana Maharshi very elegantly, he will strike at the crucial link between the sakshi and the world appearance. He will strike at that. Yes?
There is a unique word used in this verse, the chitva.
Chitva darshanam, I have also not come across this earlier, but it is Atmana Chitva Darshanam. Isn't it so? In the 16th verse, Chittam Atmanaha. So, Atmana Chitva Darshanam. The earlier line, it says Drishyavaritam Chittam Atmanaha. Atmana Chitva Darshanam. Atmana means of the self, you. You realize yourself of the nature of consciousness. What am I? I am of the nature of chit. So seeing myself as chit, that is chitta darshanam, in that sense. Right now we don't see ourselves as that. We see ourselves as a bundle of body, mind and consciousness also. If we'd say Advaita Vedanta keeps on talking about consciousness, consciousness, consciousness. So all right, granted, there is some consciousness. Fine, I'm aware, but I've got many thoughts and desires and feelings and memories and projects in life. And have a body with a lot of its own problems, this whole bundle is I. So what do we see the Atma, the self as? This bundle of body, mind and some awareness also. But what Ramana Maharshi is telling us is, you are that awareness only. This body, mind is incidental. This is the thing. In the procedure which we just did, Drig Drishya Viveka, I did it as a process of drishyavaritam, to negate the drishya. So, notice what we did. When you're looking at the flower, just notice it in your own experience. Look at the flower, I'm looking at it, let me ask you a question. When you're looking at the flower, where do I feel I am? Am I there or here? I'm here. I always identify myself as drashta, the seer, never as drishya, the object. I just don't feel that I am there. I feel I am here. I am the one who's looking at the flower. Not equally distributed or something. I am here. I am looking at the flower. Now, when I blink my eyes and I contemplate blinking my eyes, where am I? Am I this blinking eyes or the one which is experiencing the blinking eyes?
Experience.
The one which is experiencing the blinking eyes. We go even further. The thoughts in the mind that the eyes are blinking, the thought, that is drishya. Where am I? Am I that thought Or am I the one experiencing that thought? Experiencing that thought. Yeah. By this way, I am pushed back into the Sakshi. Whether the thoughts are there or not, I am the Sakshi. Whether the flower is there or not, I am the Sakshi. Whether the eyes are open or not, I am the Sakshi. What is that Sakshi? Clearly two things. It exists. I exist. Second, it must be aware because it's giving me all of this experience. That shining, everything else shines. By its light, everything is lit up. Tameva bhantam anubhati sarvam tasya bhasa sarvam idam vibhati. Beautiful lines from the Kathopanishad, Mundakopanishad. That shining, you shining, everything else shines. How does the mind shine? Because you are shining, the Sakshi. How do the eyes shine with the ability to see? Because you are shining, the Sakshi. How is the world shining before us? Because you shine, you're the Sakshi. This is not poetry. This is literally telling you what's happening right now. So it pushes you back into this identity of I am that Sakshi, that witness consciousness. This is Chitva Darshana, Atmana Chitva Darshana. This is realization. This is enlightenment. However, the two other little things are there. Why doesn't Raman Maharshi say that this is not Jivan Mukti because you have to still have to do Manonasha, Vasanaksha? Because he has already assumed. Half of the text is already over. He has assumed that. You have listened carefully to Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Raja Yoga. If you have done all that, you have done your homework, you are what is called Krita Upasthi. You are ready to be Jivan Mukta. This is enough.
Still there is this I-ness there,
yes.
Right? So it is pure Brahman versus even if it is a witness conscious, it is still an I-ness there, Ahamvritti. So there is a distinction between the pure consciousness and the I-ness.
Yeah, right. So the I-ness is still, there is a functioning of the mind going on there still. That I-ness will disappear, imagine, in deep sleep. The I-ness will disappear, but the Sakshi doesn't disappear. But no harm. Once you know that I am the Sakshi, the I points back to the Sakshi, then you can drop the I also. In as long as you're awake, you cannot drop it, it will still function. In Samadhi or in deep sleep, you will drop it, automatically it will go away. You don't bother. The I is like an arrow pointing back at you. That's all. Like a sign on the board. Here is Sarvapriyam, it's pointing there. Okay, let it be there. Doesn't matter.
It is still the Satyam Jnanam Anantam. So, Jnanam part is still the Jnanam, but this I sense is only when you are thinking about it. Right?
The what?
The I-ness is still the part of the overall Jnanam. Satyam Jnanam Anantam. So, the awareness, the knowledge, sarvajnya, sarvajnya versus I know, that connection, you're saying it is only because you are thinking through your mind, where is the connection, that is where the I-ness comes.
I'm not following. Go step by step, what are you trying to say?
So, when we say, when I am aware of something, when I know what I saw or I dreamt, right? So there is that I-ness still remaining. Now in the sarvajnyata, it is all-knowing. In that all-knowing, this I, which is the knowing part.
Now where did sarvajnyata come in?
I'm just jumping. Satyam jnanam anantam.
No, satyam jnanam anantam brahma is not sarvajnyata. There, Jnanam Brahma is pure consciousness, this Sakshi itself. The Sarvajna, it will come later on, when Ishvara, the concept of Ishvara comes in, Jeeva and Ishvara, it will come later on. It will come tomorrow in the morning.
That's a mixing.
Yes, you and then we'll come to you. Once more, this gentleman first, yes.
So, if someone is self-realized, then there are two more steps to become a Jivan Mukta.
No, there isn't. That someone, only that if that someone has not done his homework. Self-realized, that's why self-realized will take it as Jivan Mukta. But if suppose that someone complains, I am clear, I am Brahman. but I'm still not getting the ability to effortlessly overcome all sorrow and completely fulfill. There's still these disturbances coming. Why? Then the Manonasha and Vasanakshaya. So that's an exception rather than the rule. The rule is, first do your sadhana. Because why do your sadhana now? Why not jump straight to who am I? Because then the sadhana will have to be done later then. You can't escape it. Of course, doing it later is a much easier and much more powerful, enjoyable process than doing it earlier, because then you know it's the truth.
But isn't it possible that one could reach self-realization, realize that he is Brahman, and then say, well, I don't want to bother with the rest. I'm content with just this level of realization.
Yes, you can. But then you will not be... Okay, so it's a good question. The question is, suppose I realize I am Brahman, and then there's some other problem which you suggest that I might not be Jivan Mukta. Little bits of problems keep worrying me in life. I'm willing to put up with it. I don't want to do any more sadhana. I'm done with it. I'm tired. So this much realization I've got, I'm Brahman, I'm very happy with it. Your Manonasha and Vasanaksha, I'll return it to the store. So, is it okay? In one sense, it's okay. If you say it's okay, because it's all for you. If you're willing to put up with the shocks and blows of life. See, one person might complain that what was promised to me, you have not delivered. The contractor has not fulfilled the obligations. Vedanta contractor has said that I will give you limitless happiness and overcoming all sorrow. But that has not happened. I now realize that I am not the body-mind. I realize I am the Sakshi. This is very clear. See, what we did now, when that becomes absolutely clear, free of any doubt, effortless and instantaneous, then it is Tattva Darshanam. What is the difference between what we did just now and Tattva Darshanam, the enlightenment? Am I enlightened because I did this exercise a couple of times? If it is effortless, if it is instantaneous, available. I am Sarva Priyananda. Effortlessly, instantaneously, it's available to me. If you say, who are you? Tell me your name, please describe yourself. I say, wait. I have to do little yogic practice. Then I will discover Sarva Priyananda somewhere. And then I say, I am Sarva Priyananda. No, I don't have to do that. It's effortless. Not only effortless, it's instantaneous, right now available, effortlessly available. And there is no doubt involved in it, without any doubt. So this is so clear to me. In that way it is clear to you that you are consciousness, you are Sakshi. Then you are enlightened. That's there. Now Vidyarani Swami discusses this. Suppose someone is content with this only. Then what will happen? What will happen is that person will go through ups and downs in life. Why? Because that particular personality who was there before enlightenment, which has now been falsified. Now you know you are the limitless awareness, even that personality is a mask. It's not really me. Sarva Priyananda is not really me. I am the witness of it. However, that thing will go through ups and downs as per the past prarabdha karma of this particular personality. That will keep on playing out. You realize you are the actor. Suddenly you realize this is a drama and I am acting as Sarva Priyananda. I am not Sarva Priyananda. I am the actor. But the drama will continue. The ups and downs of this particular character I will keep on watching. If you are okay with that, fine. But then what benefit then do I get from enlightenment? If I did not overcome suffering, if I did not get limitless bliss here, one benefit is there, the greatest of all benefits. After the death of this particular character, you are free forever. At the point of death, Videha Mukti is assured. Videha Mukti is assured. If you have enlightenment that I am Brahman, at the point of death, you will be released. However, till the point of death, you will be tortured.
Choice is
yours. And also, why give it up? If Jivan Mukti is such a great thing, if the joy of enlightenment is such a great thing, and if you can live a life of freedom from suffering, such a great thing, then why give it up? Why not do it? And then what is the harm in doing? Because you'll be doing something. As long as the body is alive, you'll be doing something. What is your problem in doing sadhana? Sadhana is the most, at that point, sadhana, the spiritual practice, meditation, japa, prayer, seva will be the most joyful thing to do. So an enlightened being, you will see, what do they actually do in life? Do they say that, oh, thank God, after a lot of effort and many classes and many YouTube talks, I have now become enlightened. Now I can let go of it all. Thank God, it's done. No. You will just the opposite. You will feel so much joy in sadhana, so much peace and happiness in that. You will just see the lives of spiritually advanced people. We don't know who is enlightened, who is not enlightened. What do? They become more and more involved in sadhana.
Well, they are the ones you hear about, but there are others that might have quit and be happy, and you never hear about them, right?
No, they are the ones who are doing it and are happy. The other ones who are quit, they are unhappy. Because if you quit before you attain the Vasana Kshaya Mano Nasha, you will not be happy. You will not be happy.
Swamiji, but how can you know that you are Brahman if you haven't conquered Vasana Kshaya and Mano?
True.
I just have difficulty connecting with that.
So the question is, without complete samadhi, nirvikalpa samadhi, without complete purification of mind, is it possible to realize that you are Brahman? This is the question. Generally not. That's why all the sadhanas are required. But there may be exceptions. That's what Vidyananda Swami points out. Throughout life, it's not impossible. You get insights once in a while. All of us get insights. Little flashes. Now, if that flash becomes a very powerful flash, so this has been seen in people who have done sadhana for thousands of years in India. This phenomenon has been seen of people who get an insight into their reality, that I am the Atman, I am Brahman. Now, you might have two opinions on this. You might say, yes, that's an advanced seeker, but he's not enlightened. Until Vasanakshaya is attained, Manonasha is attained, that person is not enlightened. That may be one view. Then you will say he's not enlightened. Or you may say he's enlightened, but is not a Jivanmukta. That is the view of Vidyananda Swami. So the goal is to become a Jivanmukta. And if Vasanakshaya and Manonash are not attained, you are not a Jivanmukta. Then you can use terms like enlightened and fully enlightened. And like Ramana Maharshi uses Utkrishta Yogi, Supreme Yogi. Then if there is Utkrishta Yogi, is there a Nimna Yogi? Yeah. Is there a lower yogi? Yes, there are.
So is it possible Is it possible to be Jivanmukta, like people who don't get affected by ups and downs, but still not enlightened? They don't have that realization.
True. The person who might have a lot of forbearance, a person gets very upset with one little pinprick. Another person without anesthesia also has a little operation. The tremendous power of forbearance. That's not enlightenment. Just willpower. Some people have a stoic nature. Some people are just tamasic. No matter how much trouble you put them under, yes, you also come and kick me, I'm like that only. That is not spiritual.
So I was asking on the previous point. So you said that Jivanmukta could be somebody who has these insights, flashes of insights. So it could be that they...
No, Jivanmukta is not someone who has flashes of insight. No. Jivanmukta is somebody who has accomplished all. Tattva Bodha, Vasanakshaya, Manonasha.
So the person who... there was some distinction that we were talking about. I might have lost the point.
Yeah, the person who has got enlightenment but has not yet got full Vasanakshaya, full Manonasha. So that's why you will see...
So they are not established in that wisdom.
Yeah,
right? So they are not Siddhapragna yet.
They are not Siddhapragna yet.
And they are not getting Dukkha Nivritti part.
They are not getting Dukkha Nivritti.
Spots of Ramananda, bliss feeling.
So Ma Sharada, she put it in a very homely way. She gave initiation, mantra diksha to somebody. And that person who took initiation from Ma Sharada, he asked, Mother, if I don't repeat the mantra, if I don't do sadhana, what will happen?
Time of death.
What will happen if I don't repeat the mantra? See, the human mind, the first thing after taking mantra is, suppose I don't repeat the mantra. So the mother, she smiled and said, Baba, my child, if you have taken the mantra for me, you have no fear, she always used to put it, give credit to Sri Ramakrishna, Thakur. Mm-hmm. At the point of your death, Thakur will come for you and you will be liberated. However, she said, however, if you want joy in this life itself, then you must do sadhana.
Mm-hmm.
You must repeat the mantra. Now, this is a very simple answer to all these questions of Astanakshaya, Manonasha, Tattva Bodha. Yes. You see how it matches with the traditional Advaitic idea that if you have got enlightenment, if you have got realization, Aham Brahmasmi, at the end of this body, you are freed forever. That's done. It matches what she said in a devotional day, that Thakur will come for you at the point of death and you are free. But if you want joy here, now, then you have to do sadhana. All right, we'll wrap it up and take it up in the next session.